This weekend, I went to see the Public Theater's new Shakespeare in the Park production at the Delacorte Theater in Central Park. These are free performances, and I was stunned at how good it was. I saw Othello, which runs through June 24th. It's directed by Ruben Santiago Hudson, and it resonates with the times because, you know, here in the USA, if you don't know the story of Othello, it centers around an interracial couple, immigration, and fake news. Now, it's quite good. And the stars of the play are here with me. Jacudi Awoji plays Othello, and Corey Stahl plays Iago. Gentlemen, welcome and congratulations on a wonderful performance.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
And I was telling you earlier, I was sitting next to a couple of teens who had been trying to get through Shakespeare, and afterward, they said, oh, I get it. I got it. And that's because of you guys.
That's the best review you can get.
I know. That's all we want to do is to make it feel accessible, you know? But that we've been getting that a lot. A lot of people have been using that comment of how clear production is. And not just teens. We're talking about people that have been seeing Shakespeare for decades. And they come and they say that they really got the story. And I think the onus is on us often. It's not really Shakespeare's fault. It's often, you know, 10 out of 10 times is really on us to make sure that we're being very clear with the story. And that's certainly something that Ruben went after. And it helps to have a really amazing cast in it, too.
Really amazing. So, Chakudi, was Othello on your list of must-do roles?
It's a funny story because I did it when I in my senior year in college at Yale and stuff, and I, for some reason, can't remember anything about it, which is probably a good thing. God knows what that was like. But it wasn't. I mean, there were other roles. I mean, a couple of years ago, I did Hamlet, finally, and there were other ones, Coriolanus, Macbeth, and stuff, that I was prioritizing at this stage in my life. But then last year, it was a funny story. I was filming this television adaptation of King Lear, and my first day on set, I was talking, Tony Hopkins was playing King Lear, and my first day on set, after we chatted for about 45 minutes, he then went, you must be ready for your Othello. And I went, I didn't know I was, but I kind of feel I am now. And then fast forward a couple of weeks later, I come back to New York, and it was sort of offered. So yeah, it's great. I'm happy I'm doing it now, you know.
How's getting older change your perspective on the role?
Well, you live. I think there's certain aspects of a role like this, the sort of the campaign he's lived, which we can equate in modern days to sort of experience and life experience and success and failure and what that comes with time. There's a different relationship I have now to what a relationship is, you know, what having a partner means as to when I was 20 when I did it, you know, at Yale. I think there's a lot of vulnerability that comes with age, and there's also a lot of knowledge that comes with age. And these are qualities you can't play. If you see an actor on stage trying to play confident or to play knowledgeable or to play these things, you don't believe them. You have to sort of have them in you. You have to tap into them, not to necessarily play them, you know. So I think I'm more prepared now than I've ever been, really.
What about you, Corey? I loved you in The Strain. How did you get involved in this performance?
Well, this is now my third summer in a row at the Delacorte in the Park. I wasn't itching to jump back into the Park, even though it's the best job in the world. But, you know, it's I thought it was somebody else's turn. But it, you know, it just sort of I got the offer as well, and I couldn't say no. It's, you know, Iago is one of those roles that I've always wanted to play. It's incredibly intimidating, and I think that is always a clue that that's a role that you should take when something is a little scary.
Why was it so scary?
Well, I mean, I think any role that has such a storied and rich history, you know that for 400 years, actors have been taking this incredible role and finding all these beautiful, incredible things. And you know that the audience has seen them and on that stage. I mean, I think the last person to play this role was Chris Walken in the Delacorte. And so you know you're missing something. You know, at any particular moment on stage, somebody in the last 4 years has made that moment, that word, shine brightly and beautifully. And so you're just, the challenge has been set. And so you try to make it your own. And that's been that's what I'm trying to do.
It was such a joy to hate you on stage, you know what I mean? Because your character was so diabolical, but so incredibly entertaining. Did you get any inspiration from House of Cards? Was that inspiring you in any way?
No. You know, it's, I mean, I definitely have gotten a lot of inspiration from our current political climate, but I think House of Cards is, you know, at least when I was on it, that part of it is has been far surpassed in terms of absurdity and treachery in our current political climate. And so I've definitely found, you know, the alt-right and incels and a lot of these, you know, people who are filled with hate and filled with self-hate, and how self-hate can turn into hatred of other, of foreigners, of people of different races, of women. And I found that to be a very rich vein to tap.
Incredibly rich. In the playbill note, Ruben Santiago says that he turned down the role that many times because he didn't want to play Othello, and yet you do, Chakuti. What did you think about that? He didn't want to do it, but here you are.
I think because, you know, sadly, and it's great having Carl in the room because he can, you know, give he's playing the role, Iago, that sadly there was a whole period where this play might as well have been called Iago because we lost the heart of it, which is the love story. I mean, it's funny that it became so much a vehicle for often white actors playing Iago to strut their stuff, and Othello was often forgotten, and let's not even think about Desdemona or Emilia, you know. So I can understand, because one of the things that you need if you're playing Othello is a director that understands the love story and is ready to protect that character with all the intricacies and complications of the whole thing, because it's really easy to misunderstand him, and it's really easy to literally keep him as the other as opposed to bringing him into the center of the piece. So I totally understand, and maybe that was part of the reason why I wasn't that drawn to it, till you go back and you read the text and you go that the man Shakespeare called it Othello for a reason. And when you highlight those things, it's a much more interesting play for even Iago, because that's an obstacle he has to break through. If it's easy for him to win over everyone, then where's the challenge for the actor? And I think it's the only way this play resonates, why those kids you mentioned felt I get it, is that we get a whole story. We're not just getting, you know, a part of the story. We're getting a whole story that we recognize, that thing of the other, and how we get in the way of people just living their lives. Everything you've just mentioned here, Corey, about hate and anger and self-loathing and stuff is always affects other people trying to live their life, you know? And so I said yes because I was certain Ruben got what I wanted to do with Othello and understood that he was going to take care of me. And I think Ruben might have felt, in fact, I know he did, that those directors that approached him before weren't necessarily going to protect Othello in the play, you know?
Are there any moments that stand out to you that say, we're doing it differently because we did it this way? Anything in particular?
No, it's not that differently, because in all fairness, I think I've never seen it live on stage. I've never, you know, had the opportunity. I've seen a couple of films of it over the years. But yeah, there are moments that it's not so much to think of it in terms of doing it differently, but just thinking of it in terms of we're doing it the way we're doing it, you know? And that's going to be different from if someone's being true to themselves. My instincts are going to be different from any other actor's instincts that are here in this room at any one moment. And the directors and the rest of the cast and stuff. So it isn't so much, I think the moment you strive to do it differently, it becomes forced again, you know. I think the main thing is that what's true to you right now, and if you're listening to your instincts, they are individual, you know.
I was always struck by how strong, successful Othello is in the world that he's created. He's sort of fairly wealthy, and yet he's falling for these tricks by Iago. I mean, what does that say about modern times or times back when it was written?
I think Iago is a master manipulator. I don't think, you know, I think there is a way to do the play where the manipulations are so obvious. It is a problem inherent in the play because the audience and Iago know everything and Othello doesn't. So Othello is already at a disadvantage in terms of perceptually from the audience. So I think there is a danger if the, because it's delicious, these manipulations that Iago performs on Othello. And I think if the actor playing Iago really relishes it and shows it up too much, it makes the manipulation unbelievable.
And we also have to embrace, by bringing it back to the story, one thing we established was the fact that you have this general. He knows what he's doing on the battlefield. Mm-hmm. He has the line, "And when I love thee not, chaos has come again." He doesn't, this is new. Anything on the battlefield or on the sea or in battles, he knows. That's why he's a general. This thing, love, for one woman to give up everything. He's a mercenary. He travels mm-hmm. around the world doing this, but he's chosen to choose one place and one woman. This is all new to him, so he's vulnerable. He's not stupid. He's vulnerable. That's the big difference, because this is new uncharted territory to him. And don't forget, there's a huge part of this play that, despite what Iago said to him, he's spending a couple of acts still asking, give me proof, is it true? He tries it with him, then he asks her. And I think the main word to use here is a vulnerability, and it's all very new to him. And we all know that when we're in love. Love makes us do things that we look back and just shake our head and go, did I do that? We all know that. So imagine for him that has been in slavery, he's come from royalty, then enslaved, made his way up the ranks as a foreigner, and then he meets this woman, this thing that is entirely new to him. And Iago spots that straight away. He goes, oh, he doesn't know that. He wouldn't try to do that on the battlefield, but he can do that here in peacetime, you know?
Is there a moment when he breaks? What do you think the moment is when he just breaks?
Wow. You know what? He doesn't, there isn't a moment. He has a series of breaks. And one of the challenges of our production and what we've done, and I think what's made it really rich, is that there is a constant back and forth with Othello. There's a constant, I've broken, but I love her. I've broken, but I love her. She did it. She couldn't do it. You know, there's never a definitive moment till I think that even the very end, it's always moments of certainty and moments of doubt. That one of his final speeches, it is the cause. He's saying, I'm coming to do it. And yet he notices her skin as smooth as monumental alabaster, whiter than snow. Do you know what I mean? He's never one or the other. And that's the big challenge of it, is to have strength, to be brittle and strong at the same time, vulnerable and certain. So there isn't any one point. There's a series of points, you know.
And what's thrilling, you know, I think we have this, there's this really great sort of centerpiece scene between the two of us at the end of our first half, where it from night to night, you know, from moment to moment, it could be this moment. You know, it's real sort of pas de deux, where, you know, he exhibits some vulnerability. I go in there. Oh, I went a little too far. He comes back twice as strong, and I have to retreat, you know, that far to make sure that I have his trust. And
the audience are left guessing, has he got him yet or hasn't he got him yet? And all
that scene is so much fun to do because, you know, we have the chemistry that we have, and the audience is different every night. And, you know, One thing that we really had to do after our first week of previews is we had no idea that there was going to be as many laughs. I think a lot of the laughs are from nervousness because the audience knows where this is going.
Oh, it's hard to believe. Yeah. It was really hilarious at certain points. Yeah. That's why everyone got it so easily.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But we had to, there were definitely a few things where we had to just scale it back because it was breaking the tension too much. It was letting the audience off the hook too much by letting them laugh here.
And yet there is a wonderful payoff of letting people laugh and then experiencing the end and go, oh God, we were laughing. We were finding this guy charming. And at the end of the day, an innocent woman dies, you know? So there's almost a payoff from, you should never try to get rid of all the enjoyment of it. It's a bit like Richard III. You laugh, laugh, laugh till he murders his nephews. kids. You know what I mean?
And the audience is complicit.
I'm complicit in it, which again is today. You know, there's a lot of entertaining stuff in the news till you see what it really means, you know?
I was struck by all those themes, not only immigration, racism, but also misogyny. Mm. When people see this, when I saw it, you sort of want to root for the stars. What is the lesson? What should we be learning from this? Given our current political climate in the U.S. and around the world, I know as a Nigerian playing this, you know, you are not just playing a foreigner, but in the U.S. you are a foreigner.
Absolutely.
What are we to take of this?
I think it's very dangerous with Shakespeare to try to tell people what to take away from anything.
As you would know.
Exactly, yes. Yeah. So for the audience there, I was in the Julius Caesar last year that very famously was protested, and I won't get too into how I feel about that. But the beauty of Shakespeare is in the contradictions that are within the piece, and he's never saying any one thing. He is showing humanity, which is inherently contradictory, which is what's so great about he's the greatest playwright ever.
And I think if people can go back and can go, I got it, and take what they got from it and relate it to their own personal lives. I mean, how do you feel about a foreign? I'm not telling you how, mm-hmm. but ask yourselves those questions. How do I feel when I feel jealousy? When does that jealousy become envy? You know, how do I deal with that? You know, what is it like to see someone rise and feel that I should be there instead of him? I mean, all these themes are there, as many themes as there are people watching the play. You know, I certainly know for me, it's just been wonderful. It's weird that I would think Othello, given where it ends up, is the most romantic thing I've ever done. And it's a good feeling for while it's good to feel that amount of humanity. It's such a human play. It's unbelievable, you know?
It really was extraordinary. Again, I can't stress enough how good the two of you were in that play.
Thank you.
By the way, I'm sitting there in Central Park, and I'm looking up to the sky and thinking how wonderful, but I have to imagine that it rains on occasion. How do you deal with that?
Well, we just keep going until it rains heavily enough that our mics are in danger. You know, we're
not us, the mics. That's what they're worried about.
Really, you know, and so and honestly, those times where there's a light precipitation, the most glorious, beautiful times to be on stage, because where else can you get that?
We've had two rain delays so far. Funny enough, in the same week, and the second one was. It rained the first time it rained. No, the second time it rained, we had like two stops in the show.
That was the first time.
That was the first time. We had two stops in the show, and these people stayed and sat in the rain. And we came back and we still did the final scene, and it was raining. It was still raining, but no one was going to leave. The people that had stayed, they were going to sit through it. And there was something quite magical when nature seems to be listening, of at least for me, I felt holding the body in my arm. And it wasn't about the characters holding them, but there was about just two actors standing in the rain with those people watching, and you just go, where else in the world? It's just amazing.
Yeah, and you know, right before we went on air, we were talking about the weather, and you know, it's going to get hotter and hotter as the week goes on, and we're both in head-to-toe leather. so it becomes a whole other play. Character in the play, and But
we were saying we like to feel a bit of sweat.
Yeah.
We like it when it's a bit hot to feel like we've worked. You know, we've given you some Shakespeare here.
And indeed you have. We're almost out of time, but I wanted to just touch briefly, 30 seconds apiece. What are you doing next? Where else can we appreciate your work?
You know, I don't have anything booked at the moment. I've got there'll be a movie coming out in October, First Man, about Neil Armstrong and the Apollo 11 mission. And I played Buzz Aldrin, so I'm really excited about that.
Great, Chuck.
I am the first thing I know I'm doing is I'm narrating an audiobook, and my heart has been a passion project for about 10 years about the life of Ira Aldridge, which is one of the great African American actors 150 years ago. So the script is very much in development right now. So I'm hoping for some good news pretty soon.
Excellent. I can't wait to, I mean, you have that voice, so I can't wait to see your next works. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thanks.
And I'm Duarte Geraldino, and I've been speaking with Chukwudi Iwoji and Corey Stoll about starring as Othello and Iago in the Public Theater's new Shakespeare in the Park production of Othello.